Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So, as the Democratic presidential campaign rambles on its six-week odyssey toward Pennsylvania, it seems to be getting less and less about the fundamentals of why we elect someone president and more about the campaign itself. Have you noticed that? Consider this voter in the Mississippi primary on Tuesday and the reason she gave NPR for not preferring Hillary Clinton.
I did not like those negative ads. I did not like the 3 a.m. piece. I did not like Bill Clinton's fairy tale comment. And I did not like her statement saying that maybe you could have the two of us together and inferring that he could be number two on the ticket. I didn't like that at all.
So it's about the tone of the ads. It's about the fairy tale comment. It's about implying or suggesting that Obama might be a vice presidential candidate. Nothing there about who would run the economy or foreign policy better or who'd make this a better country. And what were the media talking about? Things like the tit-for-tat resignations for saying outrageous things. You know, Obama advisor Samantha Power for calling Clinton a monster, and Clinton advisor Geraldine Ferraro for saying Obama's race was helping his campaign. Now, Ferraro quit, but didn't exactly take it back.
I personally think that this is the last time that the Obama campaign is going to be able to play this type of a race card, because I think that's what it is.
You're saying they're playing the race card, not the Hillary campaign.
Absolutely. And I tell you, if anybody was going to, they should apologize for me for calling me a racist.
And Hillary Clinton herself is getting criticized by Obama supporters for seeming to prefer John McCain for president over her Democratic rival, or at least kind of suggesting it that. Here is an online mashup of a number of times that she's been using the same provocative language.
I've got a lifetime of experience. Senator McCain has a lifetime of experience. You know, Senator Obama's whole campaign is about one speech he made in 2002. If your entire campaign is about one speech, and that's what you hold up as your credential to be president against a lifetime of experience from John McCain and a lifetime of experience from me, I think the voters can draw their own conclusion.
I think that I have a lifetime of experience that I will bring to the White House. I know Senator McCain has a lifetime of experience that he will bring to the White House. And Senator Obama has a speech he gave in 2002.
So some call it the silly season in politics, where the campaign gets ugly and mostly about itself. With me now, Washington Post political columnist and author of Homo Politicus, The Strange and Scary Tribes That Run Our Government, published by Doubleday this year. Dana, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be with you.
Are we in a silly season?
Well, yes. In fact, the silly season begins the day after an election and extends until the next election. So it's silly, but I think it's no sillier than usual. Everybody pretty much assumes that any serious talk of legislating or getting the country's business done goes on holiday in even-numbered years, particularly when it's a presidential election. Now, you know, that said, there still is a live active contest, so there's more of an actual political season going on than we normally would have at this point, but because we've got another 5 or 6 weeks before the voters are going to vote this time in Pennsylvania, we've got to come up with some sort of storyline, and that's why you're getting all these other things you're talking about.
So it's going to be 5.5 more weeks of campaigning about the campaign?
Yeah, we're sort of in this guilt by association phase. So, you know, McCain has some preacher who's gone off message. Obama's got a preacher off message. Clinton's got Ferraro, and it's all a question of who's going to apologize or disown. You know, I've suggested they just declare an amnesty and let everybody start over with a new set of advisors.
A new set of advisors. Just fire all the advisors.
Absolutely, and they can rehire them after vetting every word they've ever said before. And obviously, it does get, you know, kind of silly, and that Obama had to let go as a foreign policy advisor for calling Clinton a monster. Now, presumably, we're a mature enough country that we can, you know, it wasn't necessary to do that, and we could have just moved along.
Now, I'm trying to be scrupulously fair here, but even the attempt to be scrupulously fair sometimes gets knocked as a false equivalency. So we're going to open the phones. You can say whatever you want if you're a Clinton supporter, Obama supporter, or just if you're neutral and kind of thinking, well, yeah, this is the silly season on both sides. 212-433-WNYC for Dana Milbank on the state of the campaign right now in the Democratic primaries. 212-433-9692. Because, you know, people will say, well, yeah, this campaign is worse than the other campaign, even though they both sort of do it, and all of that stuff goes around. Do you try to measure that and compare as a political columnist?
Well, you can, but I don't think it necessarily is applicable in this case. Now, for example, in South Carolina, when Bill Clinton was very clearly playing the race card, I think there was no way of making an equivalence there, that he was the wrong party, no question about it. Now, what's going on right now, it sounds to me like a bunch more noise and people sort of taking false umbrage just to try to steal a news cycle or two here and there. Now, I think what we can say fairly objectively here is that Hillary Clinton has gotten the better of this since she has turned aggressively negative and, you know, using the kind of lines you were talking about Obama's experience being a speech he gave in 2002. She's really moved up, and that's I think that's what's credited for her victories in Ohio and Texas, so there's no reason for her to stop that. So she's definitely been the aggressor here. That doesn't mean she's, you know, right or wrong.
How about that particular statement that we played from the mashup where she is saying, I've got a lifetime of experience to bring to the campaign or the presidency. I don't want to misquote her. Senator McCain's got a lifetime of experience. Barack Obama has a speech he gave in 2002. Bringing Senator McCain into it, that is seen by many people as really low because it just sets up Barack Obama to lose in the general election. She's putting the Republican opponent over her Democratic rival.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, sort of wailing and gnashing of teeth on the Democratic side that they're basically doing John McCain's work for him, that they're disqualifying each other. I find that a little silly, you know.
Well, wait, does it go both ways? Is he also doing that?
Well, he does in his own way, not on the sort of military experience, but he says she's polarizing. He's previously said that he can get her voters in a general election, doesn't think she can get his. So I think it's the same thing, playing to the other's weakness. But that's what politics is. And ultimately, when they go at each other like this, they will strengthen each other. It's not as if John McCain wouldn't have occurred to him to bring these things up anyway.
All right, now let's take some calls. And I'm always amazed at how quickly the board lights up when we talk about the campaign. And it almost doesn't matter how we set it up. People want to talk about it. So here's a Clinton supporter, Angela in Bridgewater. Angela, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. I was going to just email on the comments page, but I don't think it's silly to talk about experience. I think Obama's language is evocative and it invites all kinds of responses depending on what someone wants to believe. Experience really is critical, and what I heard in that Clinton point was that McCain would be a stronger candidate because there is a kind of experience there. Experience in having an understanding of the systemic character of government. I think her vote on the Iraq war has been simplified, and I heard Dan Schor on NPR talk about that. Nobody else talked about the fact it was a whole package, and you couldn't just say you were either for or against the war. I'm someone that marched against the war. I like Dodd. I like Richardson for experience. But I'm becoming increasingly concerned about this kind of language of Obama that feeds into the media, and it's kind of there's a contagion that you see in media, and there's lots mm-hmm. of writing about the brain and how it feeds on social contagion. So there's that echo chamber that's being generated, and I don't think it's silly. I think it's mm-hmm. very, very serious.
Right. So thank you very much. And Dana Milbank, when people defend that particular Clinton comparison, bringing McCain into it, that's what they usually point at, that it's really a political analysis saying, look, McCain's going to be strong on experience when he's officially the nominee and when one of us is officially the nominee. And so watch out, Democrats. You don't want to lose to McCain, rather than saying, rather than giving anything away to McCain for the actual general election. Where's that line?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, when I think I heard it the first time she wheeled it out in, last week in front of a bunch of retired generals, but I didn't read it as her saying McCain would be preferable to Obama. I think she was saying...
No, but handing a big campaign and gift to Obama, to McCain, the Obama people say.
Well, they can say that, but the flip side of that is him saying, well, he's up against business as usual in Washington. So if that's the case, then both Clinton and McCain are business as usual. For Democrats on either side to complain about how this is damaging to the party, I think it's nonsense that somehow the Republicans, it wouldn't occur to them to raise these points unless the Democrats had just brought them up now. I mean, the Democrats are doing plenty of things that can harm their party, but that involves Florida and Michigan and, a divided convention. But
right.
But the idea of them, pointing out weaknesses on the other side, that's what it's about.
And on the other side of our previous caller is our next caller, Ethan in Williamsburg. Hi, Ethan. You're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Okay.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Hi, Dana. Thanks for a great show. I just want to say I'm getting increasingly disgusted by Hillary's willingness to make these outrageous comments, to the point where I just told your screener that for the first time as I'm thinking it over, I'm going to be hard-pressed to vote for her in the general election. 3 months ago when this first started sort of concerning me, I thought, yeah, either them, Obama or Clinton, would be fine candidates. And then I was in Italy for a while where everyone is gaga about Obama, and I ended up being a very strong Obama supporter, but still thinking I would vote for either of them. But she's behaving, excuse me, like a Karl Rove student. It's disgusting me to the point where I don't know that I'm going to be able to vote for her in the general election.
You know, I've got
to... She should knock it off. She should really just knock it off. It's bad. It's bad for the country, and... I just needed to say that. Yeah.
Ethan, thank you very much. And I've got a few callers, Dana Milbank from The Washington Post, who are using that Karl Rove analogy or saying she campaigns like a Republican, he doesn't. Is there such a thing as campaigning Karl Rove style, and does she do it?
I think there's something to that, but another word for that is campaigning very aggressively, and, Karl Rove did deliver the White House to George Bush twice in a row, and there's no question that what she's doing offends a large number of people. However, it seems to win for her a larger number of votes. I mean, that's why she's doing it, and because we have that evidence of what happened when she turned to that approach in Texas and Ohio. So clearly they're making a calculation that they're gaining more votes than they're losing.
And Ethan also talked about being turned off to the point where he may not vote for her in November if she gets the nomination, even though he's a Democrat. I am getting this from supporters of both Clinton and Obama to some degree. And so at what point do the candidates risk in this kind of a grinding 6-week period where they are starting to go more negative against each other, of just turning people off to that degree that will hurt the Democrat ultimately in the general election as the campaign becomes about the campaign?
Well, you are right that you do hear it from supporters on both sides about how they're completely turned off. Now, I'm sure that is true in the caller's case and in some other cases. Generally, memories in these cases are kind of short-lived, and once there is that inevitable embrace on the stage in Denver, this is all going to be forgotten. That's a general rule. So I think we can't really fault them for doing what works in politics. Everybody says they hate negative politics, but everybody responds to it. So,
by the way, I know they've held 100,000 debates, but it's not like they've exhausted the issues. How about urban policy? Whether they'd favor a strong or weak dollar? How much they'd pressure Egypt or Saudi Arabia to democratize? I could go on and on. We had one from a caller last hour. But instead, we're getting this one called that one a scary name, or that one had an opinion about whether race helps or hurt the opponent.
Well, I dare say, Brian, that if you had show on urban policy, or I wrote a column on the dollar, you're not going to get a lot of listeners, and I'm not going to get.
Oh no, no, you're asking. No, you're throwing that at the wrong person, because we do shows on urban policy and the dollar. But I'm just saying, somebody, if the campaign is about the campaign, if that's the way politics is played, so be it. But does it have to be to the exclusion of the issues of the day for the next 5.5 weeks?
Maybe for the next 5.5 weeks. I mean, there'll certainly be a time to return to the issues of the campaign. Now, of course, they've all filled reams and reams of briefing books on all the nitty-gritty of these policy positions. They are there. The plain fact of the matter is that there's barely a dime's worth of difference between them on most policies. So I think that's essentially why it's become much more personal, and there's all these other extraneous issues or non-issues being brought into it.
All right. We will see what happens. Dana Milbank, political columnist for The Washington Post, author of Homo Politicus, The Strange and Scary Tribes That Run Our Government, published by Doubleday. Dana, thanks a lot.
I'll be back as soon as you have your urban policy discussion.
We'll make sure to include you on that
panel.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, sexually transmitted diseases rampant among teenage girls, a new study finds. We'll take a look.